Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This is a program that's devoted to those of you who know that there's something dreadfully wrong with the political and religious institutions governing our nation, and those who recognize the considerable malfeasance inherent in the media, the military, and global economic influences. We realize that these institutions are the problem, which means they cannot be even part of the solution. Therefore, our mission is to look behind the headlines so that we know who is perpetrating the tragedies that are besieging our planet. Because based upon the plague of adverse political, religious, military, and economic influences, we have at most 15 years. As a result, in our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His guidance regarding His covenant provides the only escape. Our phone number, for those of you who would like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I asked a question yesterday, and I want to first begin today's program by thanking the many of you who responded. I received more insights on this than probably any other question I've asked on the air. The question was, for those who may not have listened yesterday but are today, is that based upon the review I did on Veterans Day, I compiled what is now named America's 101 Wars. That since the first Europeans, British, came to America, the Europeans have, and subsequently the nation of the United States, following the Revolutionary War, has engaged in 101 wars. less than 250 years, 101 wars. And what I asked was, should I present the history of those wars? Because it will absolutely destroy the myth of patriotism and of military support, of even having an established military. Should I present those as part of the first hour of this program, or just continue to reveal the news and only reference some of these wars as they are germane to the news that we're discussing? And the response was overwhelmingly in favor of just continue with the program as it is, make the first hour a commentary on the news. While most everyone said they would love to know more foundationally about this onslaught of wars that America has been engaged in, they don't want to move away from the present news-oriented first hour. Now, that said, and thank you, by the way, for expressing that. That's what we'll do. Today's program, because we're expecting IQ Arasuli, who is the world's foremost expert on Islam, to call in from Europe in the second hour, we're going to begin today's program in the Torah. Yesterday, one of the last statements that I read was one that I want to go back to because it quite simply is the essence of the story that we're telling here. I must also say that yesterday in my email, I received even more letters from listeners regarding how much we were all learning from the story of Noah that we had not perhaps contemplated previously. And I want to thank you for those. So I want to go back to the essence of the story on Noah, because this one line explains why the story is being told at the outset of the Torah's presentation of our relationship with God. Yahweh said, "I will establish kum, I will stand up, enabling others to stand. My covenant, bereth, my family-oriented relationship with you, eth atah." Powerful statement. It means that every aspect of this Torah's presentation of the flood should be focused on what God's purpose is in telling us this story. That God is establishing the covenant here. That's what He's doing. Now, for the most part, I've always focused on the establishment of the Torah is the story that follows this one. The story that follows the flood is the story of Yahweh asking Abram to walk away from Ur of the Chaldeans, which is Babylon, and to walk with him into his home in the Promised Land. And then Yahweh delineating the five terms and conditions of the covenant Abram, who became Abraham, merciful father in Hebrew, acting upon those terms and conditions, and then delineating the promised benefits of the covenant, all of which were provided to Abraham and to all of us who pay attention to, who listen to, who observe the same story, who come to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, act upon them, and therefore are given the benefits of the covenant, which is to be made immortal, to be perfected from God's perspective, to be adopted into his family, to be enriched with his guidance, and to be empowered with his spirit. But there is something here that is profound that I had not fully appreciated until we began this review of the flood and of why God picked Noah and how this story, why this story is being told before the story of the formation of the covenant with Abraham. And God has announced it right here. I will establish my covenant. He didn't say I'm going to establish the first of my covenants. He didn't. In fact, he never says covenants plural. Bereth is never written as Berethim, plural in Hebrew. It's always one. So he's saying, I'm going to establish my covenant. It is one and only. This was singular, absolute. Bereth was written as singular, absolute. I'm going to establish my family-oriented covenant relationship with you. With you. Eth. Now, Eth is very seldom translated in most English Bibles. It's one of the most powerful words in Hebrew. In fact, it's the single most repeated word in the totality of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Eth, it means with, in conjunction with, beside, accordingly, as in accord with, even, near. All of those things are communicated. Now, there is something about Noah that we read and shared here about a week and a half ago that tells us why Noah. You know, we're never told why Abraham. Never. God picked Abraham. Now, Abraham had the option of turning him down. So did Noah. Free will always comes into play. But we are told why Noah. And since this is the establishment of the covenant, the first time Bereth covenant is used anywhere in the Torah, first time God has mentioned the word, the word that becomes the very center, the heart and soul of his teaching, of his guidance, of literally of creating the universe, God tells us why he chose Noah. He writes in Bereshith, Genesis 6:9. Noah was Sadak and Tamim, as an ish in his door. Noah was one who halak with Elohim. Now, I realize that most do not know the meaning of individual Hebrew words, so let me share them with you. Noah was. It's Hayah. It's the basis of Yahweh's name. Hayah is perhaps in the top two or three most important verbs in the Torah. Hayah, Yahweh explains when he's speaking with Moshe, introducing himself to Moshe, he uses Hayah to explain the basis of his name. He says that his name, Yahweh, is based upon the Hebrew verb Hayah, which means to exist. Preference in the first person, Ihayah, as it is in that particular revelation in the Torah, it means I am, I was, and I always will be. So, this is saying Noah was, is, and always will be upright, tzedak, righteous, redeemed, innocent, vindicated. Tzedak is as good a word as there is in the Torah. There are very few words as positive as tzedak. Tzedak describes the nature of vindication and of righteousness from God's perspective, because its primary meaning isn't righteous. Its primary meaning isn't innocent. Its primary meaning isn't vindicated, although those meanings are all embedded in this term. Its primary meaning is upright. Upright is the antithesis of bowing. It is the antithesis of cowering in fear or of bowing down to lift someone else up in praise. Being upright means that you're standing side by side, walking side by side, something that's reinforced here in a moment. God doesn't want us to miss this. God wants us to stand with Him, to be established with Him, to be upright. It is an extraordinarily important concept. Noah existed, was, is, and always will be tzedak, upright, and therefore righteous, vindicated, innocent, and blameless, tamim. Tamim is the word that Yahweh uses to describe what He was asking of Abram when in his first requirement of the covenant. If you look at, I want you to walk away from the political and religious nature of your country, which was Babylon, as a prerequisite, then tamim is the operative term in the next or the first requirement after the prerequisite, which is walk to me and become tamim, perfect. Now, Noah wasn't perfect, at least from our perspective of what perfect is, but he was absolutely perfect from Yahweh's perspective, because Yahweh had vindicated him, because Yahweh saw him as upright, because Yahweh lifted him up on his feet, because he walked with Yahweh. Yahweh viewed him as blameless, tamim, perfect, unimpaired, unblemished. It's what God does for us. For those who walk to Him along the path He has provided, we are tamim. So He was a upright, tzedak, righteous, redeemed, innocent, vindicated, and blameless, perfect, and unimpaired, tamim, individual, ish, in His home, door, in His household, in His dwelling place. That's what God cares about. Noah was picked because of how he acted, what his attitude was, how he engaged relative to his home, to his household. And Noah was tamim and tzedak because he halak, walked with Yahweh. These are the insights that are essential for us to know why he was chosen for the covenant. So now that God has told us why Noah, because Noah was tzedak and tamim, upright, righteous, vindicated, and blameless, because he halak with God, he walked with God. That's what God most wants us to do, to engage with Him. And this is so fascinating, because as you look at the relationship that Yahweh would later create with Abram, who became Abraham, the word halak is essential, but it's presented in a different format. He wants Abram first to walk away from his country and from his earthly family, so that he can be part of the covenant family, and he wants Abram to walk to Him and become perfect. But this is just very simple. This isn't walking away from anything. This isn't walking to anything. This is with, walking with the Almighty. Just a simple act of walking together, exploring together, is what God's talking about here. Now, God has now delineated the man and whose family would be included in the covenant. So what about those who are going to be excluded? So that you would know that there is a specific individual and family included, and the nature of the family that is included. And there are those who are excluded. The region in God's presence, this is now the region east of Eden, which would be the area around the Black and Caspian Seas, all the way down to the mouth of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers going through Mesopotamia. So the region in God's presence was corrupt. It was sha'at, ravaged, ruined, and devastated, polluted, corrupt. And the land was filled with Hamas. Male was overflowing, Male Hamas, with violence, destruction, and plunder, terrorism, lawlessness, cruelty, killing, and thievery. So there's just really so much that we can learn from knowing what things God says. You know, if you're going to be involved in that, you're not going to be part of my covenant. If you're going to instead walk with me and become vindicated and perfect, then you will be able to be part of my family. As we continue this, you'll notice that Noah's name is used quite often, and Noah's name is significant in this regard. Now, because of an email I received this morning, I took a little more time, and the email may have come in, I just responded to it this morning, may have come in previously. I took a little more time to look up the meaning of Noah. Because if you just look on the surface, if you look up in most lexicons, you'll just see Noah is a proper noun, meaning it's a name, and they don't really make any effort to explain what the name means. Now, if you look to the word that is closest to Noah as a word, not a proper noun, in Hebrew, you'll find na'ah, which means to lead, to guide, and to direct the movements of others, to create an opportunity. And the secondary definition of na'ah is to be in a state where trust and reliability matter, where one can trust and rely. But then you also have to think that Noah, it's written in H. And so the N is a consonant, the H is a vowel. The H is a vowel, it provides the ah sound at the end of Noah. But the O has to have come from the Hebrew waw, which was just contracted out of the name later on. It's like Yoel and Yob and so many other Hebrew words that have a contracted form of Yahweh. And so if you look at NWH, where the W is left intact, you find that as a noun, it speaks of pasture and of grazing, of space that is suitable for sheep to be nourished. It also is an abode, a dwelling place, a homeland, a residence, a home, which is really significant. You know, it's God presents himself as our shepherd. He takes care of his sheep. And the whole purpose of the Ark of the Covenant is to bring us home. And Noah's Ark was to bring us home, to bring us into a place where we could live with God. It speaks of abiding and dwelling together, of camping out together, of a beautiful mansion that has been supplied, a dwelling place in which we are welcome. So collectively, when you put it all together, it's to lead or to guide to a dwelling place with absolute certainty, reliably directing the movements of others to a favorable state or circumstance where they are restored, nurtured, like sheep in a pasture, welcomed into a joyous event, a restful abode, and through a beneficial association. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're continuing to tell the story of the covenant. Going over ground we went over yesterday, but just to reinforce the instructions that are associated with the words that tell this story. The covenant, along with Noah's relationship with Yahweh, based upon Noah's relationship with Yahweh, is being reemphasized as a family affair. Here is Yahweh speaking. It says, "And you shall be included and come, bo, be in association with and enter into the ark, the teba, you and your sons, your wife, and your wives' sons with you." The covenant relationship has always been based upon family. Yahweh as our Heavenly Father, the set-apart Spirit as our spiritual mother, sponsor our admission when we acknowledge to God that we are willing to accept the conditions under which He allows entrance into His home. Upon which He, as our Heavenly Father, and through the benefits of our spiritual mother, the set-apart Spirit, Yahweh does for us what loving parents do for their children. Lift them up. Get on their knees to help them. They protect them. They enrich them, care for them, nurture them, teach them. And so the covenant relationship was based on family, upon husbands and wives becoming fathers and mothers to bear and raise children in a protective and loving home. This leads us to, and Noah. Now we know what Noah means at this point. So, and Noah, meaning to guide, to lead to a dwelling place with absolute certainty, reliably directing the movements of others to a favorable state or circumstance where they can respond, where they can be nurtured like sheep in a pasture, welcomed to a joyous event in a restful abode as a result of a beneficial association. So, and Noah, it says, acted upon, saw, engaged in every relational and beneficial thing according to, this would be ka lo ashar, his instructions. So, Noah, this one who serves as a guide to the dwelling place, this man who leads us through his actions to this beneficial association and restored home, our home where we are restored, acted upon every relational and beneficial thing according to his instructions, Shawa, his directions, his guidance, with and through his God, Ethu, Elohim, thereby engaging in all of it, Asha. Asha repeated here twice. You know, to participate in the covenant, you have to act. That's why Asha, to act, to engage, is the verb that begins and ends this communication. Christians are wont to believe that salvation requires nothing of them. Faith is simple. You don't have to learn anything. You don't have to know anything. You don't have to do anything for faith. Just simply faith in this gospel of grace as it is presented by Paul. Never mind that grace is a name of some naked pagan goddesses. Never mind that God never mentions belief. Never mind that God has no interest in faith. Never mind that gospel is a pagan term. It's gospel. Never mind any of that. They want their salvation to be a gift that requires nothing of them. But ask yourself, why would God want to save someone and to spend eternity with someone who not interested in doing anything with him? Not interested in engaging with him? Not interested even in knowing who he is? Not even interested in listening to what he has to say? Would be stupid. I don't think God's stupid. And so, in a relationship, and this relationship, the covenant, is what precedes our salvation. God doesn't save everyone. He only saves his children. That's the right, the moral, the credible, the reasonable thing to do. And so, in a relationship, if you want to participate in the covenant, you have to act. That's the nature of a relationship. I mean, guys that are listening, I don't know if you're like me, but perhaps sometime in your life before you were married, you saw a pretty girl and you thought, boy, it would be great to have a relationship with her, and you did everything you could to encourage her to respond, but she did nothing. I mean, she gave you nothing back. Unrequited love. It was actually unrequited infatuation, but nonetheless, you get nothing back. I want to tell you, that's debilitating. It's not enjoyable. It's frustrating. And gals, I'm sure that for those of you who are listening, maybe you've done the same thing. You saw some guy, thought he was handsome or something, and said, you know, it'd be great to engage in a relationship with that guy, and that guy has no interest in you. Doesn't respond to any of your overtures. It's debilitating, frustrating, it's humbling. You know, a relationship, for it to be effective, both parties have to participate. You know, in a family, if you've got one kid that's just a bump on a log, that all he wants to do or she wants to do all day long is watch TV or play video games and never wants to eat with the family, never wants to participate in the preparation of the meal, the cleaning up of the meal, the conversation during dinner, has no interest in going on vacations and trips and exploring or camping out with the family, that child, rather than being additive to the family, is a distraction and a drain. And so that's the nature of relationships. God tells us that if we want to participate in the covenant, if we want to benefit from the covenant, we need to act. We need to engage. It's the nature of all relationships. And it is so with God. Twice here now, he uses the saw to act upon, to engage. And here Noah engaged and acted upon every beneficial thing according to his God's instructions. That's what the Torah is all about. It's Sawa, directions and guidance provided by God. And when he did that, he's reemphasizing thereby engaging in all of it. Therein lies the secret to Noah's success and to his family's salvation. Because while salvation is something that God gives us, he gives it to those of us who have chosen to participate in his covenant, in his family. Now, as we continue to share what God communicated to Noah, we find the following at the beginning of the seventh chapter of Bereshit, in the beginning. This is in the first book of the Torah. Yahweh, which as a name reinforced so much of what we've already heard. You know, it's a name based upon the verb Haya, as we find that Noah existed because Yahweh exists, because Yahweh's name is based upon the verb, which means I am, I was, I will be. Yahweh, which his name was, only has two letters that are repeated in his name. Both of the letters which are repeated are Hey, which mean pay attention, but they were drawn depicting two people standing up, reaching up, looking up, engaged, walking with God. These two repeated letters are preceded by Yahweh's forearm or upper arm reaching down, forearm reaching out with an open hand. This very notion of God reaching down and out to us to lift us up so that we can stand with him. So Yahweh said, Amar promised to Noah, this reliable and trustworthy God who leads us to the promised renewal and to the pasture of Yahweh, where we can live being restored, empowered by God. And Yahweh said to Noah, go into the ark. Go into the ark. Bo el Taba. So, was Noah's option. He could, again, choose to follow Yahweh's instructions. He had all the way to this point. He built the ark with Yahweh. Now he has the opportunity to go inside. And Yahweh says, time. Go inside. Why? Because it's a protective enclosure, the Taba. You and all your household, your Be'eth. So if there was any question as to what Be'eth, this covenant that Yahweh has said he is establishing with, not apart from, not alone, but with Noah, that is now answered here with God saying that it is based upon Be'eth, family, home, household. Because indeed, I have seen, I have perceived, I have considered, I have delighted in knowing that those with you are Tzedak. They're upright. They're vindicated. They're innocent. And they're Tzedak by means of my presence in this home. You see, God is reemphasizing this just in case some might have misconstrued what God had said earlier about Noah being Tzedak and Tamim. If you didn't connect Noah walked with Elohim, Noah Halak Elohim, or it's actually Noah Halak Eth Elohim, with God. If you did not make the connection between that and Noah being described tzedak, righteous, upright, and tamayim, perfect, then God is reemphasizing it here. He's saying that Noah and his family were tzedak, vindicated, and innocent, and upright, and righteous because of Yahweh's presence in their home, in their household, their door. Now, God's presence can be one of many ways. You can bring God into your home by inviting him there, by inviting him into your life through your choice to participate in the covenant, through just getting to know him, through his Torah revelation. You can invite him into your home when you attend his seven annual meetings. They begin with the doorway to life known as Passover, the threshold to perfection, which is specific of us being perfected by God. And then we can make our home his home when we are Bakurim, adopted into his family. We have Diane calling in from Denver. Do you have a question or a comment on any of this, Diane?
Good morning, Artis. Yeah, I was listening to what you were talking about on Zadok. And was Zadok the high priest of the lineage of Aaron? Do you make that connection with that anywhere?
Yes, in fact, in several of the chapters that I have written for Yada Yan, later for An Introduction to God, I speak specifically of Melchizedek, which is a name that is based upon Tzedak, and explain what that all means. But it is God speaking of us being upright. Hey, welcome back to Shattering Myths. Diane is no longer on the line, or we would continue that discussion. But just for those who may be curious, there's a couple of references to someone who is a Tzedak. There's the order of Melchizedek that is presented relative to Abraham. And in that particular case, we're talking about not an individual or not a priestly order, but instead of the decision, the choice to become upright by acting upon the terms and conditions of the covenant. And then there's also a individual or individuals known as Zadok, from Zadok. It comes from a statement in Chronicles where it says, "And Dod distributed them, both Tzedak of the sons of Eliezer," and it goes on to describe them. And sometimes, since Tzedak is based entirely on Tzedak, which means to be righteous, upright, vindicated, there is... what is how does that relate to the story that we're telling? Well, in this case, it's the sons of descendants of Aaron who become Tzedak. Aaron means enlightened free will. Tzedak means righteousness. And then as the intermediary, you had Eleazar. And Eleazar is from El, which means Almighty God, and Azar, which means helps. So those gods helps based upon enlightened free will of those desiring his help become righteous, become upright and vindicated, would be the kind of the complete story as it relates to the question that Diane asked. So now, continuing our review of Bereshit 7:1, Yahweh said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and all of your household," because God's saving a family. He's saving not only Noah's family, but by symbolism, by metaphor, his covenant family. "You and your household, because indeed I have perceived that those with you are upright." And they are upright, they are tzedak, they are vindicated and saved, if you will, because of my presence in this home. We were talking about how the God can have a presence in someone's home. And that is because we invite them there. We attend the annual mikre, these seven invitations to meet with God, and we bring God into our home. We share God's testimony, his teaching, with our family. And some would say, oh, but, you know, the Torah didn't exist prior to Moshe, so there's no way that they could have been sharing the Torah. Well, that's not true. Yahweh specifically says that his Torah, which means teaching, existed with Abram. And that Abram listened to Yahweh's and responded to Yahweh's Torah teaching. And so the same thing would have been true with Noah. So it isn't that Noah was perfect in the sense that he was just this angelic individual who did everything right. No, he was upright because of God's presence in his life, of prioritizing Yahweh in his life, walking with Yahweh and engaging with Yahweh in this way. So from the perspective of the textual consonants, the transition from Beeth to Bereth, Beeth meaning home and family, to Bereth meaning familial covenant relationship and marriage vow. The only difference between the two words is the addition of an R, or a Rosh in Hebrew. Rosh means head. It means best. It means finest. It means most important. So it's first and foremost. It was drawn in ancient Hebrew based upon a head. A profile of an individual. You know, it shows an ear, a nose, an eye, and a mouth of a head. And it's designed to convey the idea that if you want to be part of the first and foremost family, that you need to use your head. And what do you have in your head? Not only a brain, but you have eyes to observe. You have ears to hear. You have a mouth to respond. And so if you use your eyes to observe Yahweh's Torah testimony, your ears to listen to what our Heavenly Father has to say about his covenant, and you use your mouth to respond to him based upon what he is offering, then through that process of assimilating all of this information and thinking about it in your head, then you can become part of Yahweh's family. Is that the only difference between Beeth, family and home, and Bereth, family-oriented covenant relationship, is this depiction of what we ought to do with our head through the addition of the Rosh. Now we'll be back with Shattering Myths after the news and commercial break.